All right. Hello, Morro Bay, and welcome to the June 20th episode of Public Works Advisory Board. Please be advised that we have a quorum. We have two members not in attendance tonight, but we have a quorum, and so we'll go along with the meeting. Before we begin, could we have a moment of silence, please? Okay. Our next item up is announcements. Does anybody on the board have an? I know I do, but would anybody like to go first? Okay. I would like to announce if we could put up on camera that poster. This next Friday, June 28th, there is a barbecue blood drive. It's a fundraiser, and it's going to be held at San Luis Sports Therapy on Shasta between 12 and 4. This is going to be a benefit for Project Surf Camp. Project Surf Camp is a local nonprofit that deals with special needs children and takes them into the ocean. This is a big event, and we are Project Surf Camp is very fortunate that San Luis Sports Therapy chose them to be the recipient of the money raised. So please, if you can, come out to the barbecue next Friday. Thank you. All right, we move on to our next item, and that is the consent calendar. We could okay all of these in bulk. However, I have some questions from the director's report, so we'll go item by item. So the approval of minutes, does anybody have any additions, or does anybody like to move to approve the minutes from last meeting?
I'll move to approve the minutes as written.
Second that motion.
We have a second. Do we have all those in favor? Say aye, please.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. The minutes are approved. Next, we move on to director's report. We will start to my left, and how I'd like to do is we go through the director's report, and if you have a question, just bring up that item, and we can ask the folks at the table in front of us.
Okay. I have a question.
Okay. Yes.
I have a very simple question, I hope. On under the part about resource management and operations, you're talking about the water on page 3. It says the California Coastal Commission permit to operate the saltwater wells and outfall expired in 1999. The city has applied for a permit to make those facilities permanent. So what's happened between 99 and now?
We've been operating it as though we had a permit because no one, including Coastal Commission staff, realized that they issued a expiring permit.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to let you know, I had that same thing. but we'll go on. Stephen, do you have any questions?
Actually, I'd like to go on with what you just asked. And, Rob, those wells you're talking about, that's actually to get rid of the brine from your RO units, is that correct? Is it an injection well, basically?
No, those wells are supply wells.
Oh, they are supply wells.
Supply wells for the desal when we run it in its saltwater mode, which we really haven't done since 1999 because we went on state water about that time. So I can see how that kind of slipped through the cracks. I wasn't here, so I don't know exactly what happened, and there's no good written documentation on what actually transpired during that time. Those are the supply wells, so those are in the Coastal Commission's original jurisdiction. The outfall that we share with the power plant is in the Coastal Commission's original jurisdiction, and some of the ancillary piping and electrical conduits are within their original jurisdiction. The actual plant itself is permitted locally and was issued a CDP back in the 90s, and that does have a permanent permit. And like I said, I have not been able to piece together what exactly happened, other than it was probably not being used a whole lot, and it just was forgotten about.
Okay. And the other question I had real quick, under the potable water production, it appears based on what you have here, about 94 to 95% of the water you're using is coming from state water, with the other 5% coming either from the Choro or Moro Valleys. Is that correct?
Yeah, and that
I mean,
is,
at the present time,
yeah,
you know, in
and
this
I would say most of that, 99% of it, or I would say 100% of it, is coming from the Moro Valley wells.
Oh, okay.
Because of problems that we've had with our permit there. We cannot withdraw, extract water from the Choro Valley unless the flow is above.
And I know you'll get into
CFS,
that with that other.
And then we
part.
Have an issue with. When we do those extractions from the Choro Valley, we have a hard time meeting the disinfection requirements because those homes are so close to those wells. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the contact time with chlorine in the pipe mm-hmm. before it gets to those homes. That's one of the issues that we'll be talking
right,
a little bit about later.
Oh, okay. And so... But basically, it's my assumption, and just correct me if I'm wrong, is probably the Choro water is the cheapest water to produce, followed by state water, followed by Moro. Is that a good way to break them down?
Choro and Moro are pretty close.
You have to run the your RO trains, don't you, with the,
yeah, but we can
Moro.
Use Moro on its own and blend it with state water.
Oh, okay.
And meet the
gotcha.
The limits. And then brackish water RO, then state water, then desal.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And then the last one is under the water rates portion. I know you're saying it'll be coming up late in 2013. Do you have any idea of what you're looking at as far as a rate increase percentage-wise?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
In fact, we want to look at rate streams. We get less than 100% than we asked for, but... We also have water in storage in San Luis Reservoir. Because of previous years, we haven't used our total allocation, so that water stays in storage in San Luis Reservoir. So we're able to take that, like this next year, if we need to use our full allocation of 13 acre feet, we would be withdrawing 52 acre feet for next year out of our close to 3,000 acre feet in storage. Now, that storage doesn't last forever.
That was what I was going to ask.
It only stays until San Luis Reservoir fills. Once San Luis Reservoir spills, which means everybody gets their 100% and there's no need for storage, everybody's storage slate is wiped clean. So most of the subcontractors in San Luis County Flood Control District have about 2 years' worth of storage in San Luis Reservoir, the exception being Oceana Community Services District, and they have about negative 400 acre feet, and they owe the county water or money.
Okay. Well, I noticed that it just from the other information you provided, that it's not really a reliable source of water, meaning that it goes up and down, and because we rely so heavily on it, I'm just wondering long-term, if it depends on the snowpack, Have we thought about the future and about alternative water sources?
In its current format, with our drought buffer and the storage available, we can be provided with 100% of our water through state water. Now, if the legislature or the courts make some change to that, that's really when it could become less reliable. So that's why we are, looking at, trying to maintaining our Choro Creek water supply, mm-hmm. our Moro Valley water supply, our desal water supply, and with the new water reclamation plant adding reclaimed water to that portfolio. But remember, reclaimed water just doesn't come on its own. We need water to make reclaimed water.
Right. Okay, I have just one other question, and it's on page 4, and it has to do with the stormwater plan, which, by the way, I actually went online and I looked at it and read it.
Thank you.
Yes, I know. I was
you,
there.
You can count yourself amongst those.
I was
there's
really,
very few of us that have
I
done
know,
that.
I know. I was impressed. And I know that at the last meeting I asked you about the water sampling for pathogens, and you said that the levels vary. And indeed they do. So I would just like to know if at those variable levels they are all below what an acceptable level is, that we don't have to worry about pathogens in the.
Well, I think the level of pathogen we sample in the bay itself.
Right.
So it's beyond where the city of Morro Bay has total control over that water. So some of those pathogens are not coming from Morro Bay. I would say at some point they are higher than what the TMDL or the total daily maximum loading would allow. Damaris can correct me if I get this wrong, because she is the one that is okay. overseeing that program. They do exceed that level, but we have very little control over, because Morro Bay is just a tiny percentage of the Morro Bay watershed. Most of it is upstream Choro Creek. There's a lot of ag production, and I know that, you know, the NEP is working in conjunction with the NRCS, the Soil Conservation Service, to work on programs to work with the agriculturists in the Choro Valley to minimize, you know, some of the runoff to that area.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to make notice on page 1 of 6, the third item down, just kind of an FYI out to Morro Bay, that there's a summer youth ride program that began June 1st and runs through August 31st. And K through 12th graders are able to ride all fixed route transit systems for free in the RTA area, I guess, except for trolleys and dial rides. This program is designed to engage youth in learning how to use transit and retain new youth riders once the summer program is over. So just to let you know, folks out there, and in North Morro Bay, I saw at the corner of San Jacinto and right by Del Mar Liquor, there is a new bus stop so that kids can ride from Morro Bay to the Cayucas Pier every day if they wanted to. So I know some kids do junior lifeguards at Cayucas, but however, for the parents out there who want kids to get on the bus, it's a great opportunity. Just wanted to let you know, bring that up, any sort of predictable percentage of water. So when you brought up the idea of if we have kind of water saved there, they're really talking about it being a very dangerous year for everybody that's served. So have we heard anything about that?
No, because, you know, there's water in there that is stored for the contracted users, and then there's water there that's used for, you know, the non-contracted users. That water that's for the contracted, we get our water first before the non-contracted users do.
No, they were, the story was, and maybe, and for granted it was the Fresno Bee, maybe it was a little bit more grandiose than maybe it is. They were talking about fishing is going to be limited and that the water is getting to a very dangerous amount where there's not going to be enough to go around. So I just wanted to know if we had heard about that.
No, we haven't heard that from CCWA nor the County Flood Control District.
This is the one at Polonial Pass, isn't it? San Luis? Rather.
No, San Luis is off of the 152 if you go going between Hollister and Santanella. I know.
Thank
I've taken
you.
That trying to find the quickest way to I-5, but
and there is no
it.
Quick way.
No, there is
there
no.
is no quick way. Also, my next question is still on page 3. Could you explain? I saw especially construction working on the desal plant the last few weeks. Could you explain what I see what you've written here? But could you explain what work
so,
they were doing?
We applied for a coastal development permit for the an upgrade there, which included some new calcium carbonate tanks, along with some maintenance items that were we needed to do there. Now, the Coastal Commission was concerned with kind of the upgrade portion of that project and asked us to withdraw our approval of that, which Planning Commission did. But maintenance and operation, maintenance and repair is allowed under the Coastal Act without a permit. So we're taking care of electrical repairs, replacing pumps that need to be replaced. We think all of the permitting issues will kind of resolve themselves this fall, but we need to be ready to use that plant for the state water shutdown. Otherwise, our water supply has become very limited after that, if we don't have that, the ability to use that. So we just want to make sure that we're prepared for that shutdown.
Okay. And that does it for all my questions about the director's report. Thank you. Anybody else have any follow-ups?
Well, could I just follow up? When we have the shutdown of the state water, do we literally get no state water or some state water?
We get zero state water. It's a maintenance shutdown, so they need to turn it off to inspect pipeline, replace valves, do work on valves, so they can't have any water in the system.
And
it's
how
usually
long
about
does that
2 weeks,
last?
2 weeks long, maybe 3 weeks, maybe a week. It varies from year to year. At most, typically 3 weeks, least a week.
Okay, thank you.
And we get warnings out well ahead of time of that state water shutdown.
Okay, Stephen, did you have any other questions?
Nope.
All right, so that does it with the director's report. And so we move on to old business, talking about review the urban forest management plan. We continued it from last meeting, and so we don't have any folks from the public about public comment.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. We forgot about public comment about items not on the agenda at the beginning of the meeting, and I believe Councilperson Smuckler wanted to make an announcement or two.
And actually, also, Noah, before you start speaking, we've been asked, and folks, when you're watching out in Morro Bay, if you want to come to, you're more than welcome to come to Public Works Advisory Board anytime you want, but if you want to come make a presentation, if you could show up a little bit early, if you have materials that need to be shown, and that way you're not surprising staff to getting it already. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I am Noah Smuckler, council member, speaking tonight as a member of the public and I guess a little bit as a council member, just reporting to you on a couple of items. One, though, is to invite you all out and the public out to our Estero Community Garden. We're turning 10 this year up on Ironwood Ave, just south of Del Mar Park, and we're doing our annual dinner in the garden. It's going to be June 30th. We set up tables throughout the garden and make delicious salads and desserts from the garden itself and barbecue organic chicken. We have kids' activities, making homemade ice cream with berries and music from Jim Conroy, and it's a fundraiser this year for the Estero Methodist Church's kids program, the Children's Center. So if you'd like more information about that, you can find that at 772-9580, and that's June 30th, 1 to 4 p.m., 3001 Ironwood Avenue, and we will be there also offering to-goes if you can only stop by just to pick up a meal and run. A couple of other quick items. One was at our last JPA meeting with Cayucas, we talked a lot about the major maintenance and repair plan that we're in the process of developing to maintain the current wastewater treatment. The work that you've done recently helping the city evaluate requests for proposals on two large capital projects. One was for the project manager for the new water reclamation facility, Mr. Shively, and then for you, Mr. Makowiecki, on the design RFP for the bike bridge over Morro Creek. And just really wanted to appreciate both of you and the others who participated in that and helped deliver a good leadership team to us to hopefully get those projects off the ground soon. So,
well, thanks to giving us the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. That's our pleasure. And last quick item, it's to add on to the free bus rides for kids, was that there's also free lunches, which doesn't sound right, but they're there. And it's through the San Luis Coastal School District and the food bank, and it's occurring in lieu of the summer school programs that are usually available to help kids that might have parents off at work or are in need of in some way to get a lunch during the summer when we don't have summer school this year. So there are free lunches being offered at Del Mar Elementary. There's no qualifiers other than you have to be under 18 years old, and you can show up there between 11:30 and 12:30 Monday through Friday, and it's in their cafeteria, outdoor cafeteria area, and they're making very fine lunches and they're free. So anyone can show up. You don't have to have a specific income or not. So ride the free bus, and then pick up your lunch. Thank you for your work.
Wow, no, that was a lot of information. Thank you. That's really interesting about the free lunches. I didn't know that they were doing that. Okay, and I think that ends it. So we'll move on to old business. We're talking about reviewing the urban forest management plan. And so with that, hey, Rob, how would you like to continue our discussion from our last meeting in terms of the urban forest? Because I know we've made...
I think Ron had brought up the fact he wanted to review it further, as I remember how
okay.
it came down. That's why the continuation
sure.
occurred.
Okay.
I don't think it was more the staff presenting more information at this point.
Yeah, we did our full presentation last time, and we were just hoping for if you had a chance to review it and provide us with any additional comments. And we'll reach out to Mr. Burkhart and see if maybe we can get his comments via email that would add as to supplement the not make it part of your motion, but to just because I know that he was the one that brought up this item to continue it, so I'm sure that he might have some thoughts about the plan.
Okay, that's good. So with that, how about if we start on this end with Marlis, and because I have a few additions
yeah.
that I wanted to see added to it, and if we will work this way.
Okay.
Okay.
I had three questions for you. First of all, I just wanted to clarify for the record how much city funds would be saved by transferring responsibility for maintenance of city-owned trees in the public right-of-way to the public, to the citizens. So, and I believe in the report it says that it's about 15% of your total budget. And I think it was offline I asked you what the total budget was, and you said $40,000, but you can tell me if that's not correct, which would mean we'd be saving $6,000 a year, basically.
Oh, approximately, yeah.
Okay.
And it depends. Most of the work that we do on trees are the large pines, and it's removal. So we could spend $2,000 or $3,000 to remove one tree.
Okay.
Depends if they all die in the same year or not.
Right. My second question, and I think I had brought it up at the last meeting, I know I'm concerned about the liability and who would be liable if one of those dead trees fell, and it happened to be we had the suddenly we've transferred maintenance responsibility to the citizens, but it's still a city-owned tree in the public right-of-way, and I think we were going to ask the city attorney to give us an opinion about who would be liable in that circumstance.
You know, I asked him that question, and I forgot to remind him to give
okay.
me an answer to that, so we'll make sure that that gets carried on to Planning
okay.
Commission.
Yeah, and I think that's an important issue. I know it just actually happened down the street from me where a limb was broken, and it did eventually fall. Fortunately, nobody was under it, but it could happen. And the third issue is if you removed that provision from the tree plan, would there be any need to have a tree ordinance, or is the main purpose of the tree ordinance to change that responsibility to the citizens?
Well, the tree ordinance does, we have an existing tree ordinance 12.08 that is in the zoning code. We have a supplemental resolution, and it major vegetation is defined as on residential property as more than two trees. So you could take out two trees or less any given year and not require a coastal development permit.
Would any change be required if is that the primary purpose of putting that in the plan, that you would need to change the tree ordinance then to make it to define whose responsibility maintenance is?
Yes, we would. And you know, I'll give you an example in another community in the area that has this type of regulation. The property owner is responsible for maintenance, and they're directed on how they maintain those trees too. So they have to be greater than 17 feet higher than the road surface so that large trucks can pass underneath them. Over a sidewalk, they have to be greater than 7 feet clearance. They can't block sight distance. So there is some responsibility there. But you have some control also on what type of tree gets planted there, and you have ownership of that tree.
And does our current ordinance include provisions then for the kind of trees that a resident could put in the public right-of-way?
Yes, we have, by reference, our current regulations reference the city street tree list, which was last revised 3 years ago by city council upon recommendations from PWAB and the planning commission.
Okay.
And it's was a very long list, and now it's become a much shorter list. And it may change with our urban forest management plan, make some recommendations to add more trees to it, maybe take out a few of the more shrub-like trees that are on our tree list that some might not consider a tree, like Ceanothus, not everybody considers that to be a tree. They don't look like trees in my yard, anyway.
But the remainder of the plan could be implemented without any change to this, the existing tree ordinance. Is that correct?
I think if we, pretty much. There may be some tweaks that needed to the ordinance, but pretty much the regulations would stay in its. The main thrust of the forest management plan is how we maintain our existing urban forest.
Okay. Those are my questions. Thanks.
My only question, I think I brought it up a little bit last time, Rob. You had mentioned the fact of the inability to kind of enforce what gets thrown out in the right-of-way. But what I'm hearing you say now is the city will have a certain list of trees to go in, so somewhere you got to be watching out for it at the end of the day. I guess, am I missing something? Because I guess in my mind what I'm hearing is the fact that anybody can truly go out in the right-of-way, and I realize a lot of people's front yards are right-of-way, and half these people don't realize it, but by the same token, it's going to be placed back on them, or the city, are you saying the city has the right to go out there and say, well, this is blocking stopping site distance or whatever the case may be going on, and have them cut it down at their expense? Is that the long and the short of it?
That would be it. If it's a site distance concern, and those are typically complaint-driven.
Uh-huh.
And typically they're not from newly planted vegetation. They're
right.
And trees are rarely, once they become mature, rarely are a site distance issue. It's the more shrubby type vegetation, the hedges, the out of control, Ceanothus, that become more of a, don't get me wrong, I love Ceanothus. But it just might not be a tree.
It's a plant. No, so basically what I'm hearing, and I just want to make sure it's clear in my own mind, is the fact that people do have the right, if they wish to, out in their front yards that's part of the right-of-way, be able to put a tree out there, and if a complaint comes up as a result of that tree for whatever reason, they could be asked to have the maintenance done to make it right. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what the practice is. Strict adherence of the code would require an encroachment permit for planting of that tree.
Right.
Now, we try to get the word out, but we're going to probably err on the side of letting people maintain their own landscaping rather than going around and pulling trees up out of the street.
I follow. And it's not a complaint. I just wanted to get clear in my mind.
Yeah, guilty that was.
So a little bit about process with this. So we'll take you'll ultimately form a motion, and may sound like take all these, move them forward. So we'll move all these forward as recommendations to Planning Commission. They'll make probably a similar motion with some tweaks to the tree ordinance. We'll carry all those recommended changes along to City Council and say, these came from PWAB, these came from Planning Commission. Which ones do you want to include in the ordinance, because it's or into the urban forest management plan. So it's ultimately council's decision on what gets included in the plan and what doesn't. So we'll forward yours along with staff's. We'll probably make some tweaks to it along the way, and then planning commissions also, and any public comment that we receive. Those will be all carried along, moved along forward. So if your motion says, I move that we, all the discussion be incorporated in the recommendations for the plan, then we would just take, Damaris is taking notes, we would just forward those on to Planning Commission so they could hear what you said, and then also as a City Council.
Hi. As you know, I called you about the already existing street and sidewalks ordinance, and I asked you if that was going to overlap or if that was this was going to be combined. This new ordinance would be combined into that existing ordinance, because it seemed like there was an awful lot in that ordinance that already dealt with what we're talking about.
Exactly. Here. This is more of a overarching plan
okay.
than an ordinance. Now, there are some ordinance tweak recommendations and some street tree list modifications in it, but we're not going to replace our existing code
no.
with
right.
this.
Right.
I could interject, though, we also, though, I would think want to be careful in terms of this urban forest management plan, looking ahead in 10 years when we're not all either working here or on this board, when people come to make ordinances about trees in the town, they will come back to this urban forest management plan. So in terms of what you're saying, it's important that, yeah, this isn't like groundbreaking, like dyed in the wool. This isn't law ordinance here, mm-hmm. but it's going to be a recommendation further on down the road, yes?
And the plan really is our operating procedures for maintaining the city trees or urban forest. It has less to do with regulation than how the city maintains improves, I guess that's it, to the existing street trees and, you know, basically how we operate, not so much how we regulate.
Okay. Well, I noticed that the top priorities in the survey were beautification and maintenance. And if that's true, then a lot of our citizens want the trees to be beautiful and maintained. I drive around Morro Bay a lot, and I don't see very many trees in the right-of-way. I see the old grand pines that have been there for 100 years, but I never see just people planting trees. I'm sure they do, but I just was wondering how big of an issue it is, or are you thinking in the future that we want to prevent them from putting the wrong tree in or are not maintaining future trees?
You know, as we've heard from our friends at PG&E, you know, their motto is right tree, right place. They don't like big trees planted under power lines because it causes them to incur maintenance costs, which get passed along to the ratepayers. I think we're embracing that same policy. There's a right tree for the right place. That's why we have a city street tree list, and so that's why we're improving the city street tree list based on particular climate zones, that trees that based upon we have a lot of volunteers that know a lot about trees. Their suggestions about the trees that do well in these microclimates around Morro Bay, and we're suggesting those would be the appropriate trees to plant there. I don't see an overriding concern that we're going to be inundated by mass gorilla plantings or
well, I don't think we are currently.
No, I don't think we are either.
But that's what I'm saying. Is this something that we're trying to prevent from happening in the future? Is that the point of trying to somewhat regulate this and have a forest plan so that that doesn't happen?
As I stated before, the plan is less about regulation and more about how, what our obstacle, unless we can prove that it was planted without city's permission,
okay,
which is almost impossible to do.
Did you get much feedback from the last meeting about trees? Did anybody that watched us
couple of months ago. Did you get any feedback about
None.
The conversation, or no, I don't want to pay, and or anything strongly one
no,
way or the other?
No feedback.
No feedback. Okay. Okay. I'm a big proponent of education and communication, and I think that if people know what's coming or they know what's expected of them, like you said in that other community, that people are told, you know, you can only do this and this and this, this is what we expect you to do, then they're more than happy to comply if they know what the rules
right.
are. And I really enjoy getting little flyers in my water bill so I can contribute to the 4th of July and stuff. And I think if you just did something so simple as to put something like that in there in preparation, if this is passed and becomes that it will be the responsibility, that you have a something like, do you know about trees in the city in the right-of-way? Do you know about what kind of trees are appropriate in certain areas of the city? Do you know about encroachment permits and unpermitted trees? Do you know what your responsibility is? And if you just did a one little flyer, it would really be very informative and people would know better. So that's...
Great. Great suggestion. I love it.
All right. And with that, I do believe, I think you're seeing almost everybody to a person was concerned about shifting responsibility, especially in some parts of the city, to citizens on tree maintenance and removal. And so in terms of making a motion, if we were going to accept this urban forest management plan, in terms of the goals, I don't know how we could put that in there. I was just writing one down, trying to we could move to make a motion to accept this urban forest management plan with the addition of limiting citizen responsibility to trees, because we were talking about how onerous it is if someone buys a house and they're on a fixed income and a 100-year-old tree on their property falls down, and if they're responsible for that. I mean, I understand caveat preemptor, buyer beware, but still that can be quite onerous to people on fixed incomes. So
we have a motion.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I move that we forward the tree management plan onto the City Council and recommend approval with the following recommended changes. One, eliminate the proposed change in responsibility for tree maintenance for city-owned trees from the city to residents, thereby eliminating the need for any major change to the existing tree ordinance, and adding language to include as an objective under Goal 5, which is tree conservation, that makes explicit the need to protect existing and future trees, which I know you were concerned about.
All right. That kind of nailed what I was concerned about. Anybody would like to add to that? We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a motion and a second. So all those in favor? Aye. And all those not in favor? There are no nays. And motion carries. Okay.
In addition to your motion, we'll carry along through the minutes the discussion that you had regarding, you know, other suggestions to both Planning Commission and City Council.
Has planning gotten this yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay. All right, so Ron, if you are at home and you're watching, Rob said that you're more than welcome to email your concerns about the urban forest management plan to him, okay? So just to let you know that we continue even when our members are not here. All right, on to the new business. Review of information presented to council regarding history and status of water rights issues in the Chorro Valley. From the May 28, 2013 City Council meeting.
Yes, this item we presented, like I said, at the May 28th City Council meeting, basically a background on issues within the Chorro Valley. City Council recommended that, directed that we this be forwarded on to our Public Works Advisory Board for information, public information, and for your discussion on the item. Those discussion items would be brought forward to City Council at a future agenda. Just want to also say that as we move forward on the gauging project, as we get more information on the environmental work, that'll be going to our Planning Commission, and we'll also bring it forward to our Public Works Advisory Board.
When you say and gauging, what are we talking about?
Stream gauging.
Stream gauging. One of
the confluence of a crossroad of three key issues that have caused some challenges to our water rights in the Chorro Valley. Those include the contamination of water due to nitrate pollution here in that region, as well as an increase in water rights regulation, if you will, and then finally a continuing need for the city to diversify its her water portfolio. In the way of a little bit of orientation, here's the area that's in question. It's just to the south of the city limits, south of South Bay Boulevard. You'll note the Ashurst well field to your far right, and then you'll also hear later in our discussion a little bit about a new stream gauge that's proposed for the Chorro stream, and that would be the location noted just to the left there. Here are the facilities in question, and I apologize, this is a really washed out slide, but what you see to the left here is the Ashurst well field that lies adjacent to Chorro Valley Road, and then the Romero well field, which is out off of Canay Road.
So Romero's further east, correct?
Well, further to the south at that point, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
South
further,
and east.
Further on south, one going south back
and
to
east.
Slow.
South and east.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, good.
Southeasterly, if we want.
Use surveying jargon.
Yeah, okay.
This water crossroads that we're talking about is somewhat of a perfect storm that's caused a lot of concern. It started off with the degradation of the supply from the nitrate contamination. We started to see that contamination, and what you see here in this slide is the extent of the basin in the black lines that go throughout the valley. What's not quite so obvious are the sampling points throughout the valley that show varying levels of contamination. And this slide also shows the results of some of those reports over time. And so you can see peaks. The Romero well field is to the left, and you can see that there was just really one primary peak, and it is now fallen back below acceptable levels. And when I say below, it is acceptable now. Whereas the Ashurst well field started spiking early in the 2002-2003 time frame, with just brief periods of exceedance, but then around 2006-2007, it's exceeded and has remained above the acceptable level of contamination. We commissioned a study by Cleith and Associates to determine what the sources of some of this contamination might be. We investigated agriculture and turf fertilizers, private septic tank discharges, wastewater treatment plant discharges and overflows, animal operations, and other miscellaneous sources. And that study concluded that ag fertilizers was the primary source of the contamination in this area. They also recommended some mitigation strategies to reduce nitrogen loading through the fertilizer applications of the farming operations in that area, and then also reducing the production of water through that area and lowering the levels of nitrates through blending or other treatment methods.
Are these fairly shallow wells, Rick?
In the 80-ish foot range.
Oh, okay, so it's under 100 feet.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All of our city wells are quite shallow.
Oh, okay.
Right. As you can see here from this graph, the city water needs are indicated by this dotted line at the top. The state water supply needs are indicated by the bar graph that's not colored. And then the area above that shows how we make in these two areas. In 1972, in order to protect our rights to those wells, the city filed two applications for permits to appropriate water based on our historic usage there. The State Water Board started a review of that application, and in 1977, they held their first hearing. It was 5 years after we submitted our application. After that hearing, they went back and they continued their review. And 5 years later, in 1982, 10 years after the application, they determined that they had jurisdiction over the underflow in the Choro Creek and could, in fact, issue a permit for that matter. Then in 1995, they finally did issue a permit. So you can see that anything to do with water rights takes a long, long time to deal with. And that's because there are a lot of considerations that come into play that have to be taken into account. After the 1982 determination, we had to go through an EIR process. That is always a lengthy process. So that took time. Then, you know, the state board itself has to evaluate all the legalities associated with that, what the impact might be on other uses, and then come up with their determination. But they finally did, like I said, in July of 1995, issued decision number 1633 that said that they would permit the use of 1,142 acre feet of water per year out of the Choro basins, and that could come from wells 8, 9, 9A, 10, 10A, 11A, 12, and 16. And those wells are both in the Ashurst and the Romero fields. That board order had numerous conditions associated with it that the city was obligated to satisfy. But the most important is that the state board set some very important precedents by limiting the city's use of water when the flow in the creek was below 1.4 CFS, and that was based on the need to preserve adequate flow for protected steelhead trout. In September of 1997, the city contemplated that we had the water rights in place, but we needed to expand our water portfolio. And so the decision was made at that point in time to acquire state water as well. And so since the 1997-98 time frame, the city has used state water as its primary source of water. While it's somewhat more expensive than using private wells, we do incur a capital cost associated with our ability to draw on that state water. And when you consider the capital costs and balance that against our other uses, it makes the most sense for us to continue to use state water as long as it's available at the rates that it's at right now. We continue to rely on that state water and then use our well water only to fill the gaps during the maintenance periods, which is normally in the October and November time frame. Until about 2006, we did that quite successfully with no problem. But in 2006, we found a very large spike of nitrates in our Moro wells that caused a serious problem. We weren't able to blend it away with our other sources. And so we had a compliance issue that we had to deal with. And so we started relying more on Choro water instead of Moro water at that point in time. Let's see. Around the 2009 time frame, because we were relying on the Choro wells, we got a complaint from one of the principal ag users and property owners in the Choro Valley, Mr. Jones, alleging that the city had not complied with all of the requirements and conditions of our water rights permits. Most importantly, he was concerned that we had not installed the stream.
Doing tests on a regular basis during the time you're actually pumping. Is that correct?
Yes, we have. We use the county has an existing gauge at Kinney.
Oh.
And then we have a temporary stream gauge in Choro Flats.
So it was being monitored. It just wasn't the permanent system.
And the permit requires continuous monitoring.
Right.
We go out there and periodically monitor those and calibrate it against the county gauge.
So it wasn't totally left unaware, so to speak.
That temporary gauge has only been in place for the last couple of years. It took us a while to get there.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's a manual monitoring. Whereas, as opposed to a continuous, automatically recorded gauge. So in December 2008, I failed to mention to you, we did get an order from the state board that told us to cease the use of those wells. And that's what the source of that negotiation was all about. And so we are now, after completion of that compliance plan, are able to move forward under certain conditions to use that water. One of the conditions is that we develop a plan to take our Choro Valley customers off of the system. Now, city ordinance actually prohibits allowing users to obtain new agreements for city water if they're outside of the city limits now. But these are pre-existing owners, and they have been grandfathered in. We're continuing to work with them to find some options that will work for them. We considered four different alternatives about how we might continue to provide water for them. The first was a water treatment plant alternative. And that was a very expensive alternative on the order of about $1.4 million in initial capital costs, plus increase in staffing and O&M costs that would result in recurring annual costs forever. The other alternative was a new pipeline so that we could run the production water straight from the well all the way up to the King's tank, blend it, and then bring a distribution line back down to serve these nine customers.
Are they residential customers or are they a large user?
Most of them are residential.
Oh.
There is one organization out there that is a multifamily organization.
I guess for lack of a better, it's the I don't know what their current name is, but I think most people know them as the Roanoke of God organization. It's kind of a I would say it's a a philanthropic organization to help people better themselves, to get back on their feet.
I guess what I was driving at is you're really not looking at making more than $10,000 or $20,000 a year in water sales to these nine.
Oh, there's no way we would recoup our costs.
I'm just trying to get a size
and that's
of scope
the thing that I'm,
compared
it was
to
about to drive
here.
At is you're talking about a 2.7-mile pipeline, which is going to have capital costs of also upwards of $800,000.
And maybe serving 5 acre feet a year or something like that.
Well, I think it's a bit more than that, but not much more. So, with a capital cost estimating between $1.4 and $2 million, it just doesn't pencil out. It may be a little bit better deal because you don't see the recurring annual costs that you would with the option number one. But that would count on bringing in a pipeline at a very reasonable price here at the low end of that estimate. The third option is the non-potable water agreement, where we would continue to provide the same water that we're giving the customers right now, but it would be restricted to non-potable use. And we'd have to make arrangements, other arrangements for their potable supply. That puts the city in the position of being what is known in the regulatory arena as a dual water system. And when you become a dual water system, it really ups the ante on the qualifications that your operators have got to have. So all of our operators at the plant would have to increase their. We've completed that well, and it's in operation. We also have completed a well and an operational arrangement with the Roanoke parcel as well. Those are the first two, and the idea was to try to establish a pattern and a process. There's no guarantee that that process is going to work with every customer out there because individuals have different perspectives on the problem. So we'll have to continue to work to see which aspects of this approach will work for which customers and what else we might need to do to meet the other needs
that remain.
Do you
have to provide fire flows to these properties too?
Yeah.
Yes, we have fire hydrants out there, so we do provide fire protection.
And it's coming off the transmission line right now.
Yes,
that's right.
They also, I believe, at least a couple of the properties, as their conditions of approval for development for the county, also have fire tanks on their individual properties.
So is the city, in terms of the last solution that you're presenting, Rick, the city is incurring the cost for those wells, or they're sharing it with the county and the citizens?
No, the city is incurring that cost. And the estimated cost for that fourth alternative, based on our initial experience, is probably on the order of $350,000.
Combined for the number of people?
For all of the users.
Okay.
That's correct.
And would that be... would that just the city would be that's a good faith of moving these people off their feed and the city would incur that cost or they would in turn pay the city back for over time?
No, the city incurs that cost.
Okay.
Are you selling the water at the same rate as ratepayers here in the city?
Yes.
Yes, there may be an agreement or old agreement or two that have grandfathered rates, and I think some of the newer customers may have higher rates, but in general it's
the same rate.
It's the same or not a significant increase or decrease over our current rates.
And is part of the issue here that these other owners our access to the well, our wells, is on their land? Is that part of the issue?
Well, there are existing access agreements for all those wells that are in force, and I don't think that's been a stumbling block in the negotiations at this point in time. There have also been access issues to some of the potential stream gauge sites that were a problem in years past.
But, okay. And is a solution required before the next shutoff of the state water for these folks?
No.
No.
No. So what happens come October, November?
We can
if there's nitrate contamination.
Well, we don't use those wells. We provide them water from the same water we're providing
everybody else
with. So either it's from the brackish water RO, or last year when we couldn't supply 100% of the water internally to the city, we have an exchange agreement with the men's colony. They have a supplemental water supply that they're able to deliver water to us through our state water pipeline. So we will get water from them during the shutdown if we have an emergency and need that water. But we have to pay them back 25% more water than we get from them.
But it isn't an issue that these folks are going to get contaminated water.
Not unless... There is a potential that everybody in a extreme emergency, we couldn't get state water, we couldn't get the CMC water, and our desal plant was down. Our only choice is our existing groundwater supply. There is a potential for putting water in the system that exceeds the nitrate maximum contaminant level.
I meant for those 9 customers.
It would be basically everybody.
So they're getting the same water during the shutdown. What is their problem then? I failed to understand.
And I think that's the important thing to remember is that for the vast majority of time, they're getting the same quality of water as everybody else.
So does only that transmission line backflow when you're not running the Choro pumps? Or the Choro wells.
Yeah, we backfeed
that. It backfeeds from the King's tank.
When we run the Choro...
I got you now. I was thinking it was a one-way transition.
So the only time that it's a challenge is when we're running, as we speak, we finally have gotten approval of a site location, and we've got an indication from the state board that their perspective is that CEQA can be categorically exempt... because we're not significantly increasing usage at all. The usage that was established in that EIR back in the 80s is essentially the same. So we are proceeding to do some initial environmental studies just in case somebody determines along the way that a mitigated negative declaration would be required instead of that categorical exemption. That would also help us establish mitigation measures that might be needed while we're doing the construction of that stream gauge. So we're making progress. Those environmental documents are supposed to be available at the end of this summer. And we've gotten approval on the location. And we're starting preliminary design. So that's correct. So we have the engineering consultant on board to finish that work for us.
Is it safe to assume, I was looking at your deal on page 3 of the pumping at the Choro wells, is the nitrate levels, do they directly correspond to the how much you actually pull out of those wells? Because it appears... the graph showing the nitrate levels exceeding the maximum contaminant loading were approximately those same years. I mean, is that safe to assume there's a direct correlation? You pull more water out, you're going to get a higher nitrate level as a result of that?
Actually, no.
Okay, that's what
one of the, one of the things that we've found through some of these studies is that, in fact, we would probably be better off in the Moro Valley from a nitrate perspective, if we pumped more frequently,
okay,
because it would have a tendency to wash that limited area of contamination out of there.
Thank you.
So we'll continue to see a change in those nitrate levels over time, and we hope.
Because for the Choro, it did have that correlation. I think that's what that woman was alluding to that wrote you the email that you included as part of this package. I think she was making that premise, and I wasn't sure if that was a valid premise or not. Thank you.
So, Rick, I just have a question back on the disconnecting people and giving them their own private wells. Mm-hmm. I understand the benefit of removing the water, you said, is because it gives you a longer time to blend the water. But when they have their own wells on their own property, they're not getting, they don't have a point of use purification or anything. Isn't their water?
No, that alternative did include a point of use purification as well.
Which
the individual owner is perfectly capable of doing. Unfortunately, there are some regulations that would prevent the city from doing that for them.
So if they do it themselves, then they're getting clean water, potable water.
That's correct.
And that's part of the whole system that you're giving them when you give them the well?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, so as we're looking to provide those folks out there in the Chorro Valley with their own well and putting in one stream gauge, and then there's further upstream a county stream gauge?
That's correct.
So there'll be two. And I guess where that is located with the Chorro Valley, then that would probably measure the creek coming from San Bernardo Creek also, just because coming down that San Bernardo Creek Valley.
Yeah, I believe it's one gauge above and one gauge below the San Bernardo Creek confluence.
You may be able to make it out here. Here's the existing county stream gauge. Here's our temporary gauging location.
Okay.
And then the proposed location is just probably right off the page there.
So without this final approval, and we're building, is there a danger for the city in terms of putting in these wells for these folks that everything's not settled yet, that we might be on the hook for something else?
Okay.
No, what I mean by that is if we dig wells for 5 to 9 people, we put in the stream gauge, but then all of a sudden the problem doesn't solve itself. Could the city, although this is outside of the city's borders, is there something else that could happen? Do we foresee anything else?
The reason we're removing the customers from the city system is it's the lowest cost alternative for the community to maintain its water supply. And complying with our permit conditions. We're not allowed to provide water to customers outside. Well, until there is resolution, we are not going to step in between the county and be on the wrong side of the Coastal Commission with this permitting issue. So we're letting them resolve this issue. It is outside of our permitting jurisdiction. Our only jurisdiction in this area is with the stream gauges themselves. We are the lead agency, so we will take action on if there is a CEQA determination. We'll take first action on that, then the county will take a subsequent action based on what we do.
And if you go ahead and do the individual well or a community well, if you do it that way, you're still going to leave the fire flows handled by the transmission line because it doesn't need to be potable water on that. Is that a safe
yes,
bet?
I believe that is the case, except for those properties that had a condition by the county to provide their own fire flow.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Wow. Informative. That was a very nice presentation. Thank you. Okay, are you finished, Rick? Okay, wow. Been following that for a number of years on PWAB, but you did a really good job of presenting that. Thank you. Okay, so, well, I guess we'll be revisiting that in the coming months, if not years. All right, on to the next agenda item is future agenda items.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, you'll see a change in this. Typically, this is we've gone back and forth on how to present on upcoming items. It used to be kind of a footnote on the agenda. Then we changed the agenda to match council's. But I always thought it was a good idea to, in addition to board-initiated requests, to put on items that may be initiated by staff. So I just wanted to give a little bit of information. At the August meeting, we have a couple of business items that we want to take care of there also. And one of them will be a big party, it looks like. There will be 14 of you sitting up there. It'll be a joint meeting for the first part of the meeting with the Recreation and Parks Commission to look at options for the some revisions to the Centennial Staircase and a potential for an elevator there or some other mechanized device to get people up and down the slope there. Some think a funicular would put the fun back in Morro Bay. I can't resist saying that any chance I get. The other item that we want to bring forward, and we're anticipating that also in August, but we may need to get a – we had our two interns give notice. They graduated and
I heard that.
found other employment, unfortunately for us. But that happens with the graduating interns. But we're still planning at least introducing the topic of neighborhood traffic management. And we would like to start that with kind of the north Morro Bay Island, northeast Island streets. So the neighborhood between Island and Zanzibar, Yerba Buena, from the main street up to the hill. So that area, neighborhood traffic management is a way for the neighborhood to come together and decide what the issues are and propose solutions. And so we want to introduce that concept and get rolling on that. We've been talking about it for quite some time. And just as Nike said, just do it. And then in October, want to bring forward an item on the status item on the reclamation facility and have another opportunity for the board to provide input to the process and hopefully take more public input at that time also. So those are the staff items that we're recommending. Also, traditionally we've done, and I neglected to put it on the future agenda items, a tour of city facilities in the summer. Well, there's good daylight, and typically we do that in the late afternoon. We get the trolley, so it needs to be not during a trolley operating day, and tour city well facilities, the storage, a couple of the storage tanks that the trolley can make it to, wastewater treatment plant, corp yard. We'll try to hit a few potholes along the way so we get a flavor for that. But anyway, sometime this summer, and I'll be polling the board to see which days might work best for you. And I'll probably try a new approach to that this year and send out, I don't know if you're familiar with this doodle poll, send it out via email. It allows you to check the box when you're available, and everybody else can see it too, so that I'm not calling you or emailing you over and over and over again. It just kind of consolidates everybody's voting into one. And
Neighborhood corridor from Avalon to San Jacinto, or actually to Sequoia. I know that that's still a big issue in that part of Morro Bay in terms of getting kids to school and either, A, mitigating the surface of Greenwood, because there's a lot of, it's a very old piece of concrete and there's a lot of sinkholes in it. But then also finding some way to slow traffic patterns and whatnot. So I don't know if, I know that you're talking about North Morro Bay, more North Morro Bay, maybe, at a future meeting, I'd definitely like to be talking about the Greenwood corridor. And with that, I don't know if anybody else has anything. No? Okay, and so our meeting is adjourned, and our next meeting is Thursday, August 15th at 5 p.m.
We're starting an hour earlier because of our joint meeting. Parks and Rec Board usually meets earlier than we do.
Oh, we don't want to upset their little apple cart in their schedule,
yeah,
huh?
Okay. So they'd rather upset ours.
That's a yes, we'll have to, we'll send the email to Mr. Woods and say, how about a compromise, sir?
If there's a change in the meeting time, I'll let you know. But if there's no objections, if we could start at 5 o'clock,
totally. I was being facetious.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody else. Okay. All right, folks. We'll see you August 15th. Thank you, Morro Bay, and we'll see you in a couple months.
tomorrow.